I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the capital city. It's a long, long wait while I'm sitting in committee. But I know I'll be a law someday. At least I hope and pray that I will. But today I am still just a bill.
This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Today we're talking about the legislative session. How did Hawaii lawmakers do this year? This hour, reviewing the high points and the low points of the 30th Legislature 2019. And joining us around our table are Neil Milner, retired professor of political science and contributing editor to the show, Colin Moore, director of the Public Policy Center, Richard Bereka, longtime political writer, columnist for the Star Advertiser, and former television government reporter. So welcome to you all.
Thank you.
So what do you think? Did the lawmakers make the grade? Neil, we'll start with you.
Well, if I knew I had to follow that song, I would have brought my dobro. that's a terrific song. Let me just try to set the tone by very briefly talking about some of the way they behaved business as usual, some of the ways they behaved business not as usual, a couple of things that they took that they did that were a little bit risky compared to the way the legislature usually operates, and then a quick statement about expecting too much from legislators. The usual thing that they did, and here I'm not talking so much about issues, the usual thing that they did was there was this kind of, on key issues, lack of transparency leading to mystery, leading to surprise, and minimum wage is a good one. All of a sudden that disappeared off the map, and that's the legislature here is pretty good at making things disappear without explanation. One of the things in regard to process that was unusual is the extent to which there were norm violations that got everybody angry. You know what? However the caucuses, however the little coalitions operate, it's generally sub rosa. They don't like to talk about it. And you don't have serious conflict on the Airbnb bill, where you had a senator, De La Cruz, actually threatening other legislators about how to vote, essentially publicly saying, you're not going to get money if we don't do it, and then the House and the Senate not getting together at the end. That's different. There's always conflict, but the conflict was the thing. Some of the riskier things that they did, and I think in a good way, have to do with criminal justice, and we'll come back to that later. But I think I want to mention the fact that there is this optimistic assumption that legislators and public policy can solve the structural problems that Hawaii has. For example, affordable housing, the kind of ways that we're victims of a global market. We can expect better. But when you look at what they did this time, you can think of it two ways. They didn't do much, which to some extent is true on both homeless and housing. But the other side of it is no matter how much they actually try to do, they're limited by structural factors that are beyond their control.
Colin?
I want to start out by offering a somewhat different perspective, although I agree with everything Neil said, which is, let's talk for a moment about what people say they care about, what they want the legislature to do, because at a very basic level, we should expect policy in some ways to follow public opinion. And this is very clear from polling my center has done. There's a very recent poll out from Pacific Resource Partnership, which whatever you think of the organization, it's the Carpenters Union. I have no reason to believe this poll is not accurate. And 79% of people think homelessness has gotten worse. 71% of people think affordable housing has gotten worse. 45% of people have considered moving out of the state. And those numbers grow dramatically when you're talking about, you know, folks who are just getting started in their careers or working families. So it's cost of living issues. That is what people care about the most. So then I want to back up and ask, so what did the legislature do this session to address those issues? And I think the answer to that question is relatively little. Now, these, of course, are very difficult problems to solve. But minimum wage, as Neil suggested, that failed. And it failed for complicated reasons. But it was something that was, in theory, a priority of the governor. It was a priority of the legislative leadership. And it failed because of some concerns about whether or not making companies that provide health care to their employees, they could get a pay a slightly lower minimum wage. But that didn't pass, and so that can has been kicked down the road a year. This very ambitious proposal, first proposed by Senator Stanley Chang and adopted by Governor Ige, he highlighted it in his State of the State address, a really radical proposal to bring Singapore-style public housing to Honolulu, where you'd build big condo towers on state lands for 99-year leases. I mean, this is one of the first things I've seen that might have actually put a dent in the cost of living and developed some things, some minor issues that might have dealt with homelessness. There was originally a much more ambitious planned expansion for some homeless programs. Housing First and some of the other programs got a bit of money. The Ohana Zone's expansion was not approved. Other minor things like a renter's credit, increasing the food tax credit for working families, that none of those things were approved. And so I think I'm not surprised by this, but I think again and again, they've got a pretty low grade on dealing with those issues that people say they really want, they really care about. You know, the action we saw were things around a few good government things like vote by mail. And we'll talk, I'm sure, about the Airbnb tax later.
And Richard?
I think that for one thing that's of interest in a consumer way and also in a pocketbook way is taxes. Most of the really big taxes they ducked and didn't think about very much one way or the other, but there were a couple that they were involved with. And I guess the vacation rentals tax is the one that just sits out there, the Airbnb tax, because in one form or another, this is $50 million a year and probably going to increase. That they could scoop up if this bill becomes law. We can talk about how questionable whether or not it's actually going to go all the way, because they tried it once and the governor vetoed it. Whether that'll happen again, we don't know. There's some interest in the legislature in seriously increasing the amount of money the state can get its hands on, one way or the other. This is not... maybe it's not that different, but the interest to me this year seems all-consuming. They ducked a couple of taxes, but they keep coming back to we need more money, we need more money, as opposed to we need more government or we need more moderation.
Yeah, I know the governor had proposed, I think, the gas tax and the vehicle weight tax. That didn't fly this session. So that might be the nod to cost of living. I don't know. That is something that people do grumble about, though. We do have some sound from a couple of the lawmakers on the Airbnb issue. We've got Senator Kalani English, as well as I think Scott Zeike and Sylvia Luke.
We have two different jurisdictions. The first is the zoning, which is a county jurisdiction. And so we have jurisdiction over taxation. And we have waited for many years for the counties to enforce their own zoning, and that hasn't happened. We've held off on the taxation part. The counties are caught because by tacitly allowing Airbnbs, not making a choice on whether they're legal or illegal, tacitly allowing it to happen, they've allowed property values to rise and therefore collecting much more money in property taxes.
Why isn't the city and county of Honolulu enforcing its ordinances against those illegal units? That's the circle that we find ourselves in, is that we rely on the regulation, we really rely on the counties doing their part. It's not just the state, it's not just the counties, it is a combination, but the counties have to do more.
What's good for the city and county of Honolulu is not good for Kauai and not good for Maui, definitely not good for the Big Island. And so we are very encouraged that all the counties are working towards stricter zoning issues and enforcement issues. And then, you know, this is something that we got to continue to work on.
And this week, the Honolulu City Council, I think, takes up the vacation rental bill. So that's going to just make things interesting. But do you want to comment on what you've just heard?
Well, the ode to home rule just warms the cockles of my heart since it's coming from the state legislature. They're not always that interested in home rule. But they do have a point here, that part of the problem here is that the hard issue is not taxing. The hard issue is regulating, and the city and counties just using Oahu as an example, have come up against two brick walls, one of which is the fact that it's controversial. It's so controversial that the legislature has essentially, the city council has essentially punted each time it's faced it, because ultimately you have to make a hard decision that's going to value one side more than the other, and they haven't been ready to do it. The other part, which is should get as much attention, is how hard it is to regulate. That it's hard. It's not rocket science. You need a lot of people to monitor it and to be involved in seeing whether things are enforced. That's not something that we do very well, because we don't usually put the resources in.
Neil, one of the other things with that is that there are different players this
yes.
time around. Local Five is definitely a player in the whole mix of what you're going to do with vacation rentals. And because a hotel union is in the middle of it, and it's a pretty vocal, powerful mm-hmm. union in its own right, so it can say, well, we don't want you to touch this at all. It really delays any impetus for finding a solution.
Yeah, just one other quick thing. Remember how important side jobs are to surviving here. And so when you think about neighborhood preservation, which really touches everybody, and Lee Cataluna has written some terrific stuff that emphasize neighborhood preservation, you gotta also recognize something else that is very much local style, which is the need to have another way to get some money into the house so that you can survive here. So this is a pretty gut-wrenching issue, but the only way you can decide it is to decide who's going to have their guts wrenched a little bit more.
A senator once told me that this is one of the most emotional issues, that there are tears on both sides.
Yeah.
I mean, tears for people who feel like their neighborhoods are being ruined, and tears for people who depend on this income to pay their own mortgage. So one thing I'd like to point out, though, and Richard mentioned this, some new players coming in. And, of course, Local 5 is one, but the other might be Hawaiian Airlines, because we've increased our tourist population, our visitor numbers, from 8 million to 10 million in the last few years. There hasn't been significantly new hotel construction. So those folks are staying at Airbnbs. 2 million extra visitors is a lot. That's bringing a lot of money into the local economy. And so the state has really, it's in a difficult place, because by using their favorite solution to difficult problems, kicking the can down the road, they've taken something that might have been manageable 10 years ago and now has become incredibly painful to try to regulate and fix.
Right. And Richard, you had mentioned, covering this issue at Honolulu Hale when you had brown hair.
I was going to say that this is is far beyond a hardy perennial, but it's been around for 40,
decades.
50 years.
Yeah.
And also the universality of it, that I think we all know someone who's renting out a room or part of a house to other people in one form or another. It used to be in Manoa that it was to college students, and now it's become a little mini industry to lots of people to supplement their income. At the same time, it's also a larger new form of big money for corporations who are controlling blocks of houses, maybe not next to each other, but big groups of houses, or also apartment buildings, or half of each floor could be B&B rentals, and they're done commercially.
Yeah, and I know a lot of eyebrows were raised at the article about Marriott. I think it was joining the Airbnb scene, right? If you can't beat them, join them. I don't know. So there, I think Hawaii Good Neighbors raised some concern about, I think, an email that's gone around, and they're wondering who's behind that bill, in support of Bill 89 at Honolulu Hale. So just lots of distrust around.
Well, here's another significant thing that happened this time. Civil Beat had a piece on the fact that where you came from in the state Senate, for example, really affected how you voted on this bill. And the people who didn't like the bill because they felt it only dealt with taxes and not with regulation, not really getting at the heart of the problem, were from Kailua, Kaneohe, that area. Senator Favela from the Kapolei-Ewa area, and our only Republican, is wants much more regulation. And that's really interesting, because it means that Airbnbs are spreading to what is actually the last piece of relatively inexpensive oceanfront property that people have to live on this island, which is, if you've ever, or you know, you've lived here a long time, you drive out to Ever Beach, you drive, you say, these are funky houses. This doesn't look like Kailua or Kahala at all. It's spreading, and as it spreads, it takes on a different kind of issue, that it's no longer localized, and so I think the coalitions are going to start to change. The fact that he's a Republican doesn't help in terms of political power, but I think that's clearly a difference this time.
And I think at the bottom line is, you know, if you live in Ebba Beach and you can't afford to live there anymore because of a vacation rental situation, and then where do you go?
Sure. Well, that's the general question about mobilization and rentals and unaffordable housing.
And, yeah. And of course,
that's always the issue in Hawaii. Sure. Is you can't afford.
You can't afford. Yeah. Extended family. You go live with your, you know, another generation in your house.
And of course, the proponents would say, like Donovan Dela Cruz, look, this is here. Let's start collecting the money. We have to fill this hole in the budget. $46 million it might provide. So let's take the money and let's let the city and county enforce their own ordinances.
If it moves, license it and tax it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, if you're just joining,
doesn't even have to move.
If you're just joining the conversation, we're talking about what passed, what failed at the legislature this session. Our guests in the studio: Neil Milner, retired UH professor of political science and contributing editor to the show; Colin Moore, director of the Public Policy Center; and star advertiser columnist Richard Bereka. And we'd like to know what you think. Join the discussion by calling 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. You know, we did talk to Tom Yamachika from the State Tax Foundation about some of these issues. Here's what he had to say.
This legislative session had a lot of high drama in it, most of which centered around the Airbnb bill, but there were also a lot of pushbacks and push-asides in the budgetary context. With the House trying a new budget system and the Senate kind of going along with it, departments were kind of scrambling and going crazy, but it looks like everything ran fairly smoothly. There were a couple of bills that I was kind of glad to see go. One was what I called blankety-blank, House Bill 1190. That was a measure to adjust the income tax rates, but after one committee got through with it, it put blanks in all the key spaces, so we didn't have any idea what the bill was going to do, whether it was going to be a tax cut or a tax hike or something in between. The other bill that we were kind of holding our breath about for a while is the general excise tax hike for education to specifically benefit UH and the public school system. Fortunately, that died, and those are the two bills that I do not miss.
Blankety blank bills. How many times have we seen that?
Can I say something quickly on the people talk about gut and replace bills and bills that go in without any kind of authorship on them and all that. They do that because the majority of the people in the legislature want that to happen. So it only would come if somehow you had an enormous reform movement from within the legislature, which doesn't look like it's happening. But that was what it would take. The majority, the reason they do that is because the majority of the people who are in the legislature voting for bills approve that already. So when they say, well, gut and replaced isn't fair, well, it's not. It's really fair if you want that bill that you just gutted and replaced. So that's what happens.
Although the legislature doesn't exactly stand up and make a statement as accurate and as candid as you just did, right? I mean, they don't say, we need it, and that's why we use it, and we're willing to run the risks, and sometimes we mess up, but overall it's good. They kind of avoid the issue like they do on a lot of their rules.
They do have more lipstick down there, don't they?
For the pig? You know, we do have a call on the line.
It's unfair to pigs.
We have a call from the Big Island. Nicole from Pahoa, what's on your mind?
Oh, hey. Yeah, well, I had something on my mind, and now I'm listening to the conversation, and I have a lot more. But to begin with, I live just outside of Pahoa. And so as your first speaker, I missed his name, suggested, it seems like the legislative session is completely limited by whether or not the finance department will fund or approve their bill. And as Richard mentioned, you know, here we are talking about increasing tax on individuals through the gas tax or individuals through the TAT that they pay through their Airbnb or what have you, but we're giving corporations a break. So the issue that I'm referring to is the helicopter tour industry. And, you know, you guys are probably pretty aware of what's going on with the crash that happened last week on Oahu. But last year, Russell Ruderman put forward a bill to study the effects of the noise on the health, and it was passed. But then when it crossed the floor to finance, it wasn't funded, so the bill died. And last year also, a bill was created to, forgive or relieve helicopter companies of paying GE tax. Luckily, that was stopped. But this year, the same bill was put through. And, you know, I watched the hearing on the Internet, and the lawmakers were trying very hard to find a way to mitigate giving this corporation a break from taxes. They were suggesting that there would be a per-passenger tax, you know, all kinds of different ways that we could work this. And then when that was sent to finance, I was quite hopeful. I checked in a week later. I thought, this would be good. You know, they can start taxing per passenger. They can start paying their fair share. And the bill was passed with no amendment. And the corporations, the helicopter companies, are basically being given a free ride. So that's kind of my issue with the helicopter companies. But in listening to what you guys have been saying, what comes up for me here on the Big Island is how we are all subjected to the rules that are designed in and for Honolulu. And it's totally inappropriate for small town living.
Yes.
The Department of Boating and Transportation tried to triple mooring fees for boaters based on, you know, Honolulu rates, which for Hilo rates is kind of unaffordable. It makes boating completely out of the question for people
yes.
that live here.
Thank you, Nicole. You know, we do hear your point of view that you folks feel left out. And I recall a year ago when you folks were dealing with the lava issues and they were communities pleading for some kind of relief because there were so many helicopters going over. I don't know what to tell you. It's a rough one. Richard, do you want to chime in?
I think in many ways it's what Neil was talking about, the systemic problems with Hawaii and a chain of islands. And frankly, part of it is that the news media has withdrawn from the neighbor islands to a large extent. There's only one newspaper. There used to be two newspapers, and they both used to have bureaus on each of the islands. That is not the case now. The other part is that the neighbor island newspapers are left to their own, and there's not very much interest in Honolulu in covering what's happening in the Maui district courts. So that's a problem that makes the island chain a lot more separate, and the Internet's not putting it back together.
Any other thoughts?
Well, one thing I thought I'd bring up, this wasn't directly but what the caller wanted to talk about, but she did bring up the point about things mysteriously dying in the finance committees and the money committees. And I think for a lot of people, that is a very confusing part of the process, because our state legislature has given a great deal of power to the money committees, maybe less so now after this experiment with zero-based budgeting, but I don't think that actually undermined the power of Ways and Means and House Finance. And behind a lot of these bills, like the Airbnb, you saw Donovan Dela Cruz very active. A lot of the bills that died, they died in House Finance, which is run by Sylvia Luke. So for callers who wonder why it is this way, one thing I would like to point out is it's this way because the legislators want it this way. I mean, we talked earlier about how they're not always all that transparent about the rules, but there's nothing set in stone that says that we have to have these money committees be extremely powerful. They just are. And often there's a lot of attention around bills that make it to finance and then die. I'll give you another example, which was the ban on flavored e-vapes, on flavored electronic cigarettes that had a lot of attention and then died in House Finance. And legislators, I suspect, often know that the bills are going to be killed there. And so they can make a big show of supporting bills where there's a lot of support, but they don't really intend to pass them. And then when it gets to finance or ways and means, the bills are deferred or they're not heard. Very rarely is something voted down. And I think that's the other thing people who don't follow this professionally find very confusing. It's, you know, they want to see a big showdown, like we actually saw with Airbnb, the tax on that this session. But as Neil pointed out, That's extremely unusual to see that kind of public disagreement. And in some ways, this is an effect of being a one-party state. All of the fights happen behind closed doors, and it rarely is visible to the public, which means that it can be tough to follow pieces of legislation, because from what I often hear from people is, I thought this was moving. Everything looked good. We had a positive hearing. There wasn't any negative testimony. And then lo and behold, the bill just disappears.
The trap door.
The wisdom of the wisdom of the legislature is in creating conference committees, because then you have the conference committee just doesn't meet on the last day. And, Bunky, I had the bill for you. I was really working that bill all the way through the legislature, and it just didn't. I don't know what happened in conference committee. I don't know. And that's what constantly happens. That's why I was so surprised that this year vote by mail actually got through, because I think five times it had died in conference committees. So I stopped writing about it because I figured,
really?
Someone is not going to let this thing pass.
And yeah, and it didn't pass because
it never passed.
They didn't care. That's one of those things. They didn't care. And all of a sudden, something happened that was not dramatic that made him pass.
If we care about something, so Richard, we just have to tell you don't write about it, and then it'll pass.
That's right. Pay no attention.
We do have a soundbite from Senator Kalani English about some internal politics and about what he claims is the House not sending members to conference committees.
We believe in differences. We believe in that's the democratic process. But we also believe that we owe it to our constituents to sit down and negotiate at the end. So we always appointed conferees. We always showed up at the conferences. And the House started this practice of simply not appointing conferees. That sort of defeated the whole purpose, right? Because you have to have the two different sides. And when we sit down to negotiate, you need people to negotiate. We understand that you may not like the bill, but you passed a version and come and negotiate your version.
Now, I think there was a situation where we had the bill that was backed by AARP on mm-hmm. saving, mm-hmm. and they were saying there are no conferees that have been assigned to this, and they finally got something, I think, like scheduled 20 minutes before the deadline, and then that didn't make it out.
See, that's isn't that a glorious invention?
It's not like the AARP having the elderly save easier is like voting to bring in Mao Zedong into the government of the United States. It's a fairly non-controversial bill, right? It's a nudge, right? It's essentially saying, you're all pretty much shafted when you get old, but here's a little thing that'll get you bit more money. One of the interesting things about the Airbnb bill and about the way Senator De La Cruz handled it is that essentially he was pretty clear about what the norms were. On the one hand, he's basically saying, this is the money committee. I'm the person at the money committee. If you don't do it my way, the kinds of assumptions that you'd always make about that won't affect other things that disappeared, you're going to lose. At the same time, what he was doing is reflecting this norm that they used, that this is a powerful way. Now, remember, all legislatures, the money committees are extremely important, certainly in Congress.
Absolutely. And what Senator De La Cruz did this session isn't all that foreign to the U.S. Congress.
Oh, yeah.
He got Senator Nishihara, who is very invested in a lot of these public safety reforms, who represents a district that isn't very affected by Airbnb, to change his vote. And this is pretty standard stuff in most legislatures. It just doesn't often arise to the surface where it's visible to outsiders like us. One point I wanted to make before we turn away from this conference committee stuff, in case anyone is confused, though, is that it wasn't out of laziness that the members of the House didn't show up. This, again, is a negotiation tactic whereby not showing up, they force the Senate's hands either to vote the bill down or to adopt the House version. So they're playing hardball as well.
But that kind of, I used to do labor negotiation. That kind of hardball comes with a lot of risk.
Absolutely.
Because you have to be ready to accept the downside. If you're doing gaming, the experimental gaming, that's going to really throw the monkey wrench into the whole business.
Well, this is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. Happy or unhappy about what went down at the legislature? You can join the discussion by calling 1-877-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a short break.
Ladies, hormone changes happen as we get older. What should we expect in perimenopause? I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. Join me today on The Body Show. We'll talk with an expert about the changes as we age and how to make this transition as smooth as possible. That's today at 6:30 on The Body Show.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Haleakala Ranch, with a legacy of livestock, conservation, and land stewardship since 1888, working to create, maintain, and preserve open spaces for the Maui community. More at haleakalaranch.com.
You are back with the conversation along with Neil Milner, Colin Moore, and Richard Bereka. And we have a call coming in from Waipahu. Dave, you have a question.
Hi. Not too happy. Not at all. One of the biggest political issues of our time here in Hawaii is the homeless crisis and housing crisis. And it's very mediocre what they have done. I'd like to hear some comments on that. And what I find just incredible is the amount of money we're pouring in to keeping the status quo the way it is, and not really doing the enormous amounts of housing. And then Stanley Chang had a really good idea with that Singapore thing, and it seems to have not gotten much of anywhere. And so we continue to have 10 cities there all around. And the least we could do is make sure that we have Ohana zones, so people don't have to be on sidewalks and in the parks and really interrupting everybody's lives.
All right. Thanks for that. Anyone want to weigh in on this?
The interesting thing I think about the homeless crisis, and it is a crisis, is the universality of it. It's not just here. It's in every municipality that you visit across the mainland, and you go to Europe, you see the same thing in London, you see the same thing in Amsterdam. So cities with very sensitive social legislation already in place and tons of money to address it have not done it, which does not mean that you got to throw up your hands and say we give up. But the thing is that it's going to be a new part of our life, I think, is to see this new problem of people not being able to afford housing.
Neil, you just came back from Oregon. They have a
there? Yes, they do. I mean, and it's changed over the years. Portland was always a city that had what I called hobos. You know, the old style guys with ruddy faces, beards before it was in style, and flannel shirts, kind of hanging around. They're no longer the demographic. It's broader. It's more ubiquitous. And like everywhere else, it's a function to a great extent of lack of affordable housing. Portland is certainly doing more than we are to change that, although how affordable this housing is going to be is different. I think that part of what's going on here is that we really don't know what to do. I mean, there isn't any good answer. And so you can see what they gave money for and what they didn't give money for is sort of a calculated guessing game. And that's why I admire so much the people who work in this field, because they're essentially working on fumes, intellectual fumes, political fumes, not necessarily financial fumes. But people have to recognize two things, that if you move the homeless out of one place, they're going to go somewhere else. And that a good chunk of the homeless people are not mentally ill non-compliers. There certainly are some. So that if you accept the opposite, if you say get rid of them in, let's say, around the Discovery Center, which is a really crucial place, if you think they'll disappear on you, and if you think that they're just crazy people and that we can put them in some kind of mental institution, you're essentially creating myths about the policy that are going to make it counterproductive.
Colin?
This is one area where I will give the state some credit. I think in the last several years they have made a tremendous effort to try to make to try to manage the homeless population and house people. And yet 80% of people think it's only gotten worse despite all these programs. And of course, like Neil said, we're talking about a very complicated group of folks. I mean, really, you can sort of divide them into to three groups. The folks who are simply too poor. They don't have enough money to get a stable place to live. The people with manageable drug and alcohol problems that just need a bit of help. And then the people who have severe severe mental problems need a lot of help. And so programs like Housing First, those are for folks who just, you know, might have manageable alcohol problems, but it gets at a lot of tricky issues. And for the Ohana zones, the bill that went down that would have expanded them to six zones on Oahu, I mean, the question always is, so where are they going to go? And people don't want the Ohana zones near where they live. I mean, it's an unfortunate truth, and so that creates difficult problems for the legislators in creating more.
We did reach out to Hoy Appleseed. We talked to Gavin Thornton, who is the executive director there, about this problem.
The place where I spent the majority of my time was working on affordable housing and homelessness issues, primarily on behalf of Partners in Care, Oahu's homelessness coalition. For those issues, you know, it was really a mixed bag. One bright spot was on mental health. You see people on the streets experiencing psychosis and really living in inhumane conditions. And some bills were passed this legislative session to help connect people with the mental health treatment that they need when they're unable to make informed decisions about their own medical care.
And, you know, I think, you know, we should say kudos to those folks out in the trenches who are out there, those nonprofits, the outreach workers, and the efforts by all the counties to try and do something, you know, the churches. I think everybody sees the problem and they're trying different things, but unfortunately,
absolutely. Not enough. As hard as they work and as smart as they are, if ultimately you have to be optimistic by the fact that the population of homeless, according to the census, declined maybe by 2% after many years, you have to be eternally optimistic. You have to understand how much trench warfare this really is, and that there really isn't a light at the end of the tunnel here. I think you're right. You're with us. And there are two homeless people sleeping out here as I came in today, which is not something that I used to see regularly.
Right. Well, we do have another call coming in from the Big Island, Kimo from Hilo. Do you have a question?
Yes, good. No, I had a couple little statements here. I'd like to know why the Outer Islands have over 400,000 people and were completely ignored by the legislature. And we have these power people there in Oahu who run the show. I don't think we should have a legislature. I think we can save a lot of money. What have they accomplished this year? Very little for the price. They also increased their wages. Oh, yeah, yeah. But did they increase the wage for average people? Hell no. What a fine legislature.
Yes.
Pigs at the trough. Yeah.
Well, Kimo, I think that you hit on perhaps one of the reasons why voting is so low. People are just disgusted. And the legislature didn't help itself by ducking a minimum wage bill and passing a raise for themselves, or not passing. You just had a smile as the train went by.
All the mayors did come out to say, hey, you know, when they went to the legislature, we think you ought to raise the minimum wage, and they didn't.
You know, I recalling back in my younger days at the legislature, I would always marvel at how, you know, they keep saying they're going to have a minimum wage bill, but then no one testifies for it. So just the difference now is that at least there's a constituency has grown up about the minimum wage being something that was of interest. Before, not even the unions would testify in favor of it.
It may reflect what I always say is the difference between a progressive legislature and a democratic legislature. Mm-hmm. The legislatures that are more affected by the progressive wing of the Democratic Party in other states have moved in the direction of passing the increase of the minimum wage, although so have others. This legislature here has a kind of caution and the reluctance to really do that.
I want to go back to talk about some of the good government issues that didn't pass too, because mm-hmm. at the beginning of the session we heard from some very powerful people that this was the year of reforming elections. It was going to be the year of managing money in politics, and I think some of this does get at what Kimo was talking about. I mean, there was a bill to ban lawmakers from holding campaign fundraisers during the legislative session. That's long been a complaint. That I don't think that even got a hearing. There were some other bills to prevent to extend the time where they have to be out of action if they retire from the legislature or leave for lobbying. There was one of my favorites was the anti-moonlighting bill, which clearly was directed against Mayor Kirk Caldwell, that the governor and mayors wouldn't be able to hold outside employment or earn compensation while holding office. I think for a lot of voters, these seem very sensible. Why should we have our legislators holding fundraisers while they're deciding the bills that affect these companies? And, you know, the $1,000 a plate dinners at some very fancy Waikiki hotels. And yet, these are the bills that don't even get a hearing. I think we could walk down the street and we wouldn't find a single voter who thought any of those were bad ideas. They should have been passed. And yet, they don't move. And that, to me, is a bit disturbing. I normally think most of our legislators work very hard. They try to do the right thing. But some of these bills, the money in politics bills in particular, that seems shameful. And that's when I agree with folks like Kimo, who are so frustrated.
This year, you had two progressive judiciary chairs, both the House and the Senate had guys in those seats who had formerly said, yeah, I support all that kind of stuff. And it didn't happen.
You know, we did reach out to the Drug Policy Forum of Hawaii, Carl Berquist, the executive director. Here's what he had to say about marijuana.
We're very excited about a couple of bills that have reached the governor's desk. Those bills are HB 1383. This decriminalizes a small amount of cannabis, marijuana. The other bill is HB 748. This would reform the civil asset forfeiture program. And basically, this bill would require a conviction before the police can seize and sell someone's assets. On the other side of the ledger, we wish there had been a little more progress on the medical cannabis front. There was an opportunity to add employment protections for medical cannabis patients. Currently, they have no protection from being fired simply for being a patient or for having it in their system, even if they're not impaired.
You know, it remains to be seen, too, what the governor's going to do about the decriminalization bill.
Isn't that interesting? Well, across the mainland, it's sweeping the state legislatures. There's more and more. And I don't know if it's just an inherent actual conservatism among legislators or the voter base that it's not something that Hawaii wants to do, to decriminalize completely.
Well, look how long it took them to do the medical
from
about 15 or so years from the enabling legislation until they actually did it. That's an interesting question because the states that are legalizing it are a very interesting mix. They're not simply
It's not just the coasts.
You know, no, it's not just the coast, and it's not just left of center people. I think Alaska has done it. Florida, which is highly competitive, although I think the medical marijuana of Florida had a lot of elderly people, pushing for it. So you want to talk about a little bit about the public safety one? Very quickly, because he raised a couple of the other issues. The civil forfeiture one, the legislature really did do something that's different. I mean, civil forfeiture is turned into essentially law enforcement theft, where they can take your property and pretty much keep it, even if you're never found guilty of anything, or if you were simply a party that they somehow attached to you. This is done without trial. The controversial one was that may be controversial because they're going to get sued, I think, by the National Rifle Association or the representatives, the red flag law, which allows, if you're in a family where you think that someone has a gun and really is a red flag, there's something that could go wrong with it, there's a procedure you can use to tell the police and maybe do something about it. That's very much on the radar of of National Rifle Association. One of the interesting ones to me that that got passed is the a little bit of attempt, in addition to the, this, to move toward the criminal justice reform studies that have been done here and that were started in the Abercrombie administration, the big study. And one of them appoints this commission to kind of oversee the prisons, to sort of watch things. There's an interesting little part of that bill, which I don't know how they're going to do. That is that the commission can enforce how many can declare that a prison is full, right? That it says this prison has certain numbers. We've had rules like that at the state and federal level. We've had law decisions. I don't know how you're going to make that work if you have someone that you're going to put in prison. There are other solutions if you want to reduce the people who come to prison in the first place and so on. But to me, that's a really key procedure here that I'm not very optimistic about. But their criminal justice stuff, they at least took some chances that they hadn't done before, and also a little bit on bail reform.
Right. No, that was a big issue.
Yeah.
We have about 8 minutes left, and we need to probably talk about the water rights bill because that was the other flashpoint toward the end. The environment is not happy with the governor when he's tried to say, hey, can we work out something here before the end of the session?
Interestingly,
Richard.
Governor Ige is governor largely because of the environment vote coming out so strong in the last election for him. And it'd be interesting to see exactly where the Sierra Club, do they regret their vote for David Ige now?
He did manage to repackage himself as this environmentalist against Colleen Hadabusa, which was very interesting because I don't think anyone really thought of David Ige as an environmentalist prior to this. But this bill, for folks who've had a hard time following it, is very complicated. It kind of touches on a lot of hot points from local agriculture, Native Hawaiian rights, some of the old Big Five. Alexander and Baldwin is involved. And this deals with whether or not these four revocable permits will be extended to allow A and B and other folks to continue to divert water. It's even more complicated because Alexander and Baldwin recently sold old sugarcane land to the tune of $260 million to a company called Mahipono, which is a diversified agricultural company. The governor clearly wants this to happen, as Richard mentioned, but it is. Maybe you guys have a better idea of what's actually going to happen at the end of all this drama.
I was hoping we would just let you hang out to dry. The way you were stuck. Yeah, this is the problem with the bill, that there are certain technical issues that we don't understand. For example, this whole thing about the lease and A and B and the new corporation about what happens to the water now and all this concern about it. To me, the simple thing was this was going to kind of slide its way through. Let's keep things the same and we'll study it, which, of course, is very much a regular thing here, and sort of finesse the court decisions that were made. And then all of a sudden, the opposition to this began to become a little more visible, and the Democratic Party took a stand. So the issue didn't become clearer, but it became more visible. And as soon as it became more visible, business as usual wasn't going to get this through. You couldn't just slide it through. And so you came down to the fact that what Ige wanted was at least something knowable, that is, you'd have the status quo, whatever that means, and you wouldn't lose the deal, and we would wait to see what happens, which is not the only time that the governor thinks this way. But what finally happened was that no one could agree on anything. There were more costs to go along with this than there would have been if the issue had stayed a kind of quiet issue and just the sort of technical issue, which is hard for us to understand. So I don't know no one knows what happens now. I always worry that in the case of litigation, the repeat players somehow win.
And they won't actually shut off the water.
I don't think so. I don't think they'll shut off the water. No.
I think the bigger problem is going to be actually finding people to farm that land.
Yeah.
That's the bigger problem. They didn't address that at all.
Well, we're going to shut off your mics in about 2 minutes. Any final thoughts? Good, bad, indifferent on how lawmakers did.
Well, I don't think that this legislature by itself and by its product this year earns. Let's bring them all back for another time. But I think next year they're going to have to really do a lot of the stuff that was in the fail or study category in yesterday's newspaper section for them to get good grades.
And minimum wage in particular. I'm sure people are very frustrated about this.
But I always think of the model of the General Aviation Airport when I listen to what you two said. For years, this is what, well, you know, you'd lived here for 75 years already, and you were barely born. There was the General Aviation Airport. Where are we going to put it? We need another airport. Mm-hmm. Every year they'd fight about it, and then they quit fighting about it, and it disappeared from the scene. So I think there's always this sense, this kind of fantasy, or sometimes it's a reality, that this is the way you'll deal with some issues. I don't think minimum wage is there because it's a national issue now.
In literature, it's called a MacGuffin. So these are political MacGuffins.
Yes.
All right. Ready for takeoff, and let's hope we don't crash, right? Well, we would like to thank our guests today, Richard Bereka, Neil Milner, and Colin Moore. And we'd like to thank you, the listener, for joining us on today's show. There were several calls that we didn't get to. Please contact the TalkBack line and leave your comments. That number, 808-792-8217. You can also send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. If you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.